Hello, everyone. Welcome to TechNet Radio. My name is Kevin Remde, and I'm a senior technology evangelist on the U.S. Developer Experience team at Microsoft, and I'm your TechNet Radio host today. Now, this is the first of a multi-part series entitled App Compat in Windows 10. Now, at the time of this recording, the majority of users I talk to are very, very happy with the migration to Windows 10. And even in business, IT professionals are happier than they've really ever been in the past. But before supporting it in a broad way in business, there's a lot of things that have to happen. There's a lot of testing of particular applications and scenarios, and we have to be concerned about compatibility for the sake of our people's productivity and managing risk to our organization. Well, that's what this series is all about. We're going to discuss the various aspects of application compatibility, browser compatibility in the move to Windows 10. And today we are fortunate to have the App Compat guy himself, Chris Jackson. Chris, is your title still Cyber Architect in the U.S. MCS Cybersecurity team at Microsoft?
Cybersecurity Architect, that is correct. Yes, sir.
Fantastic. Well, Chris, welcome. Welcome. Really great to have you here. So now, before we get into today's topic, why don't you just tell us a little bit about what that is? What is a Cyber Architect?
Well, we work with a lot of customers on, security issues that they have, helping them configure their products securely. And one of the areas that sort of directly applies to this is currency. Software currency is a really key security feature. New software is just more secure. So helping customers get there more quickly is really, really important to us. And really, the reason people typically go solely is, as you point out, because their stuff doesn't work. And we really need to make sure that we help to make that easier and faster for everybody.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so let's set the stage for our conversation here. Windows 10, awesome. The end.
Well, it was great talking to you, Kevin. Great as always.
Thanks.
We'll talk to you at Windows 11 time.
We'll see you next time for TechNet Radio, yeah. Okay, well, let's define the issue, of course. You have a kind of an interesting definition of compatibility that I really like. What is that definition of compatibility?
The definition of compatibility is, has no bugs on the platform you want that stop you from getting your work done. And I put that in just because I have conversations all the time with customers saying, give me a list of all the compliant software, all the stuff that works. And there really isn't a state of being of being compatible. It's not like it flips one bit or goes to another. Rather, it's, hey, you've uncovered a latent bug. The bug was always there, but you never noticed it before, either because the OS made up for it or just didn't run that code path. Right? And there, I put that out there simply because, there's a lot of interest in, hey, just put out a tool that scans everything and tells me if it's compatible, yes or no. And we just can't do that. We cannot prove that something has no bugs, mostly because it was proven in 1936 by Mr. Alan Turing to be mathematically impossible. Or is it Sir Alan Turing? I actually don't know if he was ever knighted. It should have been. But it's mathematically impossible. You can't do it. So it really comes down to strategies that you make sure that you still are able to get your work done on top of this new platform.
So then how do we get there? I mean, what's the recommendation as far as if I know that there's no bugs, I can't test for entire, I know that there's always going to be bugs, I can't be sure that something's going to work, what do I do?
Well, it's risk-driven, see? I mean, and this, particularly now as we're moving into an era of, Windows as a service and constant evolution, the old way of doing things, which is spin up a project, get a big bucket full of cash, and then go find every single app, right? And sort of, isn't it interesting, right, that we have to start off with, I don't know what I have, and begin there. That's where most people start out, though. Find everything you have, run it through a very expensive, arduous process, and spit out the other end, whether it's going to work, right? And, of course, you can still do that if you have unlimited time and unlimited budget. But, A, you're going to find it hard to keep up, and, B, you're going to find that you're overspending to manage small risks. If you have 25% of your stuff breaking, it makes sense to look at a lot of things. If you have 0.1% of stuff breaking, you probably would choose to look at less stuff.
So then what I need to do is, it's not really a matter of just leap and then expect the best, is it? Or is it a matter of maybe doing some prioritizing? I know you can't, like you said, it's not a matter of finding all the apps or doing the entire inventory, but there has to be some prioritization as far as the things that are the most important to me. And if I know that those couple of the top things, because it's going to be, 80, 90% of the workload and the things that are making my people productive, I know what those things are. So as long as those things work, I should be okay, right?
Yeah, that's exactly the line of thinking to go down, right? Which is, what are the things that really are going to be the most impactful? Where is the risk the highest, right? And when we think about, how this happens, this is actually a practice that most customers already know how to do. You know how to manage relatively small risks. You do that once a month on Patch Tuesday. Mm-hmm. There is some small risk that something's going to break. Certainly it's not widespread. A quarter of your stuff isn't going to fall over, but something might. So when you think about what do you do there, there are some customers that will say, you know what, I've got a couple apps that just can't go down. If I think Microsoft, for example, Visual Studio has to work every single time, right? So if that goes down, all of a sudden we've got a really big problem. So that's the kind of thing we look at, just ensuring it validates across the board, right? And same thing everywhere else. If something just absolutely positively has no tolerance for failure, we test it. But if, you know, we find that everything is working fine, we may choose not to look at very much else because the risk is so small. Trust but verify. The other thing that's enabled now, particularly as we start looking at ways that we can do different distributions of Windows as it grows and evolves, is that we have this ability to do canary in a coal mine type approaches. Hey, if we'll just get some folks, whether it's in a lab, whether it's, you know, folks who are daredevils out in production, whatever the case may be, and get them on the fast ring. Get them on the insider's ring, whether it be slow or fast, so we can start seeing, hey, what's coming up? And does there appear to be any risk there that I may want to manage more thoroughly? And trust but verify. Don't take our word for it, right? I mean, we try to give you numbers, but the problem with our numbers is it's all based on early adopters. And early adopters behave differently than mainstream or laggard type adopters of technology in terms of the software they have. It's not just ours. So while we try, you'll still want to be able to have a good plan that manages the risk, looks at, you know, taking small subsets, look at them, make sure it's okay, and finding that ability to go faster and really become more agile again.
Wow, yeah, okay. So is there anything in specific in Windows 10 that is going to improve compatibility for applications over previous versions of Windows? I know we've done a lot over the years, and you've been involved in a lot of the different things we've done with compatibility toolkits and so on. But I'm curious if Windows 10 just simply carries those tools forward and if there's any improvements there.
Yeah, so the tools are mostly going to be the same. There's not been a whole lot of investment there because the investment has really been in don't break stuff. And we've been doing such a much better job. I mean, you know, I remember still to this day the time that Steven Sinofsky got on the stage announcing Windows 8 and said flat out, if it works on Windows 7, it'll work on Windows 8. Mm-hmm. Turns out if your Twitter handle is at AppCompatGuy, that when he says that, your Twitter feed just pretty much explodes.
I wonder who that
is. People wanting to verify that. But the reality was it was a really small rate of failure. And the one final frontier that we had left was version checks. The app itself may work great, but it was saying, hey, what version of Windows are you? And if it didn't recognize you, it was like, nope, you're not on my whitelist. I'm not going to run you. You are out of here. And it just flat out wouldn't run. So that's actually something we started doing in Windows 8.1 and continue in Windows 10. The version number's not changing anymore. Until you add in an application manifest that says, yes, I know all about you, Windows 10. I'm cool. I'm not going to blow up if I discover that you're actually sitting underneath me. And once you do that, we'll tell you the truth. But now we've gone from a lie by exception to a lie by default. And that has taken us to just about everything. I mean, save your normal culprits, right? Your antivirus and your anti-malware and stuff running in the kernel. Those are ones that you almost always have to upgrade because they're specifically doing things that are implementation dependent. But all of your regular user mode software, you know, we've really resolved all but a few of the one-off exceptions on those. I mean, it's just been a terrific story.
What a great, that's a great idea. That really works well. And it's interesting because, I mean, you know, the experience that a user has, they don't know or should they have to care about a lie about a version number. All they know is their application decides it's not going to work now on this new version. And that's not their fault. It's the fault of the application developer and maybe some bad programming practices. But it sounds like we've got a really good lie to get past that, and it solved most of the problems. That's a really smart idea.
Oh, we've seen some really funny ones, too. I mean, I think one of the funniest ones I've saw, it was so hilarious I had to post it on my blog. It was an application that spat out like a massive, stack dump. Here's everything on my stack in this big, terrifying failure message. And that was that application's way of telling you, I really kind of wish you were running Windows 2000.
Wow.
And it was fixed with a version lie. It all went away.
Fantastic. So beyond some of the tools that are kind of built in, are there any tools that we still have that you would recommend people looking into if they really run into that application that has an issue and they can't get past? It's not a version issue. It's something really serious.
Yeah. So on the tooling side, our go-to tool for remediating applications remains AppCompat Shims, which you have the ability to do that using the compatibility administrator tool. It ships as part of the Application Compatibility Toolkit, which is kind of hiding now inside of the Windows Assessment and Deployment Kit. But you install the ADK, choose the App Compat Toolkit, and you'll get the tool, and apply shims. And really, that's sort of the other interesting thing that has changed, is that this is Windows 8 time, but for anyone who's still on Windows 7, you may not have caught this. We actually fixed a bug in Windows, and it's not the first time that fixing a bug has caused applications to fall over. But the bug we had was that if you were .NET code, we used to have all .NET code on the global exclude list, and we wouldn't apply shims to the framework itself. But the global exclude list didn't actually work, so we had to go back and fix the bug. And once we'd fixed the bug and the global exclude list started working again, suddenly if I happen to have used shims getting to Windows 7, then those shims may need to be modified to get to Windows 10 to make sure that we have the framework included. But beyond that, right, it's the same tools, the same knowledge you have continues to make payoffs. You're just going to have to use it a whole lot less often, if at all.
So are there any other concerns that people should be considering when they're moving to Windows 10? I'm wondering if there are some companies who maybe have done things in the past that they really should reconsider now that they have Windows 10 installed.
Well, and you really hit upon a super important point, which is the overwhelming majority of the work that we're seeing now in App Compat is not stuff that Windows 10 broke. It's stuff that we would have broke even back in Windows Vista, but customers said, you know what, I don't need that for now. I'll do that later. And they took on technical debt. And they're starting to see the value now of going back and paying off some of that technical debt. And probably two of the biggest examples are customers who said, you know what, I'm not going to bother getting to standard users. In fact, I'm going to not only leave everyone as a local admin, but I'm going to turn UAC off so we're just local admin all the time and it behaves a lot more like old, familiar, comfortable Windows XP. Oh. And in Windows 10, that becomes a bit of a problem because the UAC infrastructure is the framework upon which we've built all kinds of our security frameworks. Mm-hmm. And the new modern applications, the universal applications, depend on that. And if we don't have that in place, they don't run. So like the Edge web browser won't run if you have UAC disabled. And all of the universal applications that ship, they're not going to run. I won't be able to bring them in. And that's potentially a really big loss to the organization. There's actually a penalty now, more so than the security penalty that you paid before. So I see a lot of people who are looking to make up that technical debt now and at least get to UAC enabled, if not getting a larger percentage of their users demoted to standard users, which in today's day and age, it actually is not really much of a demotion. You can still do everything you need to do. Handling the 64-bit deployment as well is another one that I see people saying, you know what, I had some old 16-bit code, I wanted to keep it alive, but there's so many advantages that I could be gaining in terms of the ability to consume more memory, right? It's really hard to even buy a computer that has, you know, 4 gigs or under unless I'm going to the discount racks, and having people take advantage of that can potentially add a huge amount of value paying that off. That's where most of the work is, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, that's very good to know, and I'm sure a lot of companies really probably hadn't even considered that. The old practices sometimes can be something they need to reconsider or reevaluate. So that's good, very good advice. Now, before we wrap up here, I just want to know if there's any additional resources or some things you can point people to get more information about this topic, because I'm sure they're chomping at the bit now to start. Where can they go?
Yeah, so I keep a blog, which is up at appcompatguy.com. And there I try to put in, you know, all the interesting things. You'll notice there's a lot of askew talking lately about web app compat, which has really been where most of the attention has been focused lately. That's where most of the effort has been put in there. So it's a lot of things there. And then, of course, up on TechNet, we have a portal still talking about app compat, providing those resources, and as well as, you know, finding that in the assessment and deployment kit to give you that guidance. The reality is the big transition is, you know, start thinking in terms of understanding, measuring, and acting based on risk as opposed to big projects. And if you make that transition, you're going to find you're a whole lot more agile because we don't have a big problem this time, and we haven't really since XP retirement. So making that transition, biggest payoff you can come by.
Great, good. Well, thank you so much. And I'm glad you mentioned the web app compat because that's actually going to be the topic of parts 2 and 3 of this series. So thank you so much for your time today, Chris. We'll talk to you again soon. And we're going to see you all for part 2 coming up here, App Compat in Windows 10 series. We're going to talk about Internet Explorer 11. We're going to talk about some important date that is coming up very soon. And I want to thank you all for watching TechNet Radio.